for a new mayor who will choose the next police chief. Some candidates have focused on stopping crime as a campaign issue, but for Sims Jacobs, safety on the streets of New Orleans starts with the police.
Everybody's running for office and they're using this zero tolerance. And I think that zero tolerance should be used on the against the police and not against the people. And that's what I want people to focus on, because right now, people don't feel safe with the police.
For FSRN, I'm Christian Roseland.
Free Speech Radio News is a worker-run collective. Our newscast is produced by Simba Russo and Monica Lopez. Headlines editor is Shannon Young. Leon Caldwell is our Washington editor. Our technical production team at KPFA in Berkeley includes Eric Klein and Antonio Ortiz. For archives of this or any other FSRN newscast or documentary, you can check out our website at www.fsrn.org. That's fsrn.org. You can also email us your comments or story ideas to comments@fsrn.org. From KPFK in Los Angeles, I'm Aura Bogado.
The preceding program was brought to you by our members. This is KZYX and Z FM 91.5 Willits in Ukiah, 90.7 Philo Boonville, 88.3 Fort Bragg, and KZYXandZ.org on the World Wide Web, Mendocino County listener-supported community radio. It's 7 o'clock and time for Education Now.
Are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh.
Hello, Alfie.
Hello.
Alfie, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, great. I just wanted to be sure you were there and that you could hear me before I introduced you.
Mm-hmm.
This is Athena Melville, and tonight my guest on Education Now is acclaimed author Alfie Cohen. Alfie has authored over 10 books and numerous articles on children and education. He was educated at Brown University and the University of Chicago. He lives in Boston with his wife, his daughter, and his son. Alfie Cohen is another of the over 60 high-profile professionals in childhood education and health to sign the Alliance for Childhood. This alliance challenges state and federal policies in education. I so much respect your work to empower parents. And Alfie's done so much. And tonight, Alfie will focus on his new bestseller, Unconditional Parenting, which asks that we work with children rather than do things to them. And through this process of working with, we communicate our unconditional support and love. He can give us 30 minutes of his time tonight. So here we go. Hello, Alfie.
Hello there.
Thank you so much for joining us on the airways at this late hour in Boston, and please thank your family for sharing you with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So where do you want to start? When I read your books, I think of Jung saying, where love rules, there is no will to power.
Well, you know, so many of the parenting books we come across and workshops on parenting are really geared to answering the question, how do we get kids to do what we tell them? And some of them do it in an old-fashioned, crude, autocratic way, and some of them do it in a more up-to-date, jazzy, groovy way. But what I tried to do with unconditional parenting was to start with a different question rather than offering a different technique to answer the old question. And my question isn't, how do we get kids to comply? My question is, what do kids need, and how can we meet those needs? And one of the things I think kids need is not just to be loved, but to be loved for who they are rather than for what they do. And so the idea of unconditional parenting means that we make sure what we do with them communicates the message that kids matter to us and we care about them even when they screw up or fall short. And that's an important message, not just for us to think we're sending, but for them to think that they're receiving, which matters more than our intention. And unfortunately, it requires us to rethink a lot of traditional practices, because most of what's out there in the discipline world, even the groovier programs, offer techniques like time out, which is basically love withdrawal from the child's point of view, or positive reinforcement, where we praise children, which is the epitome of conditional parenting. It says we're going to give kids a verbal reward when they jump through our hoops or impress us. And so I try to work with parents to think about what we have to stop doing and what we should start doing and what we should do differently so that kids feel that we love them no matter what.
That we love them no matter what.
Or as my friend Debbie likes to say, we love them for no damn good reason.
We love them for no damn good reason other than that they are
right.
Who they are.
Right. That's what human beings need, because when they're accepted for who they are and they don't have to earn our love, they can begin to accept themselves unconditionally. That doesn't mean they don't have high standards for themselves or we for them, but it means they're actually more likely to thrive and flourish and learn and become decent people when they have that underlying core of knowing that that they've been accepted for that reason. So that means challenging an awful lot of traditional discipline. On the one hand, because we often make our acceptance of kids conditional on their being good, but it also requires us to rethink the ways in which we may subtly communicate to them that we love them more when they're when they do well in school, for example, or at sports, or in some other endeavor. It's when they're having trouble and not doing so well that they really need us to be excited about them.
They really need to know that they're loved at that time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I recall your story about your daughter having a tantrum.
Yeah.
And that, you know, your instinct was to, you know, but you didn't, you know, you fought that original, you know, that sort of sense of, oh, well, let's, you know, withhold her book this evening.
Right.
And you realize that no, now more than ever, she needed that book.
Yeah. Most parenting experts would say that when the child does something obnoxious or breaks a promise or is difficult or aggressive or whatever, that it would somehow reward bad behavior were we to act in our usual loving way, in this case, to read a story and snuggle with her. And that's conditional parenting, and it's based on some very problematic assumptions about motivation and child development and human behavior, all coming back to us from the late Boris Frederick Skinner.
Right.
A man who did most of his research with rodents and pigeons and wrote most of his books about people. And it's really remarkable the extent to which so many of us are behaviorists without even realizing it, thinking. In fact, I modestly offer Cohn's Law in the book. Nobody else will call it that, so I have to, which is that you can judge the value of any book for parents, or in some cases for teachers in talking about disciplinary questions, based on how many times the book or workshop contains the word behavior. The more times the word appears, the less valuable it probably is, because the focus there is not on kids, it's just on actions that we can see and measure, the stuff on the surface. And the more focused you are in getting the right behavior, the more likely you are to fall back on bribes and threats to manipulate kids into doing what you want. But when we look below the behavior, when we look at the values and motives and reasons, we are looking more closely at the child. The programs that exist to try to get kids to use the potty on our schedule, not theirs, or to stop crying and go to sleep, or to do anything else. These kind of programs are really dressed up forms of behaviorism. We're not interested in the child. We're interested in making the child emit the behavior of our choice. And that's problematic for a lot of reasons. It's disrespectful, I think. Tends not to work very well in the long run.
And
but most of all, it gives kids the message that they're loved only when they perform.
Yes, and only as an end. No, they're
right. Right. That's right. As a means to an end.
Right.
Right. As opposed to the care for its own sake. I tell another story in the book about my daughter Abigail, who's now 10 years old and just on the other side of the wall from which I'm speaking. But when she was about 4, she really loved The Wizard of Oz. And so I saw that a local theater troupe was putting on a play, a dramatic version of The Wizard of Oz, so I snapped up 2 tickets for us to go. And the day before the play, she was acting up in a really distressing way,
yes,
a way that got under my skin and made me mad. And I came so close to saying to her, you can guess.
Mm-hmm.
If this doesn't stop, we're not going to
the
play.
We're not going.
But I stopped myself, fortunately, in time, because I realized that those theater tickets either could be a gift of love or a tool for controlling her.
Right.
But they could not be both.
Yes. Yes, I agree with you totally, and so often there was a language for a while that was used like, it's not you that I'm annoyed with, it's that behavior. Have you heard that? No, it's not, I'm not angry at you for
mm-hmm.
breaking Johnny's toys, I'm angry at that behavior.
Well, I'm ambivalent about that response.
Uh-huh.
On the one hand, I think it makes sense in principle. And if we were able to communicate that clearly to kids, I think that would be okay. Because sometimes we do get mad at their behavior, and we can't pretend otherwise. And they do bother us, and I think we have to let them know that there's something problematic about, being nasty or obnoxious or aggressive or whatever. Although our response will vary depending on their age, among other things.
Right.
We don't have the same expectations, or we certainly shouldn't for a 3-year-old that we have for a 13-year-old. By the way, it's just heartbreaking to go out in public and watch people berating little children for being little children, having out of proportion, inappropriate expectations. But how do we get the message across to them that annoyed as we are at what they're doing doesn't mean we don't love them? That's a tricky question. I think it's hard even for adults sometimes to be on the receiving end of that and understand they're still loved when what they've done has met with exceeding disapproval, especially if we keep getting mad at a lot of things the kid does. After a while, it starts to sound like, honey, we love you. It's just that we don't like anything you ever do.
We love you because you're ours, but could you please change?
Yeah, exactly right.
I got the very strong sense in reading your books that you don't make this mistake of everything is biology or everything is environment, but there's that dance. And you make a point in your book, The Brighter Side of Human Nature, that so many people, scientists, will say, yes, there is this dance between biology and environment. And but when they're faced with a problem, then they just come right down to it. Well, it's in the genes.
Right, right. Everyone claims that there's both, But then when you look at how they actually address issues or where the funding goes or what the stance is on various questions, it's they tilt overwhelmingly toward a kind of biological determinism.
Right.
That book, which I wrote 15 years ago, doesn't contain the very newest research, of course. Of course, it's a book that I don't mind telling you has sold dozens of copies in 15 years.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I'm amazed you mentioned it. Almost no one knows about that book of mine.
Huh. How do you feel about that book?
Oh, well, I like it. I'm fond of it. I'm glad I wrote it.
When
I look back on it, I probably should have made it a little more accessible. It's probably the most scholarly of the books that I wrote.
It's excellent. You demonstrate so clearly that choice is built into the organism. It's not external to it. And that when you have the synthesis, it's the basis for liberty and love is choice, which is nature or biology at ease in its environment. I just kept thinking of Wittgenstein, you know, and it at ease. When you don't have disease, then you're at ease. And if people could just, I don't know when we lost this ability. I don't know if we really have lost it. But to really believe that, you know, choice is inborn. It's not something that comes external. And it's by not giving people choice that they start to, that gets lost. So wonderful.
The nature-nurture question aside, I think in practical terms, it's important to think about how people need to have some say over what it is they do every day, to be treated, as one researcher put it, like origins rather than like pawns.
Yes.
And in various ways and in different books, I've kind of played that out to see what it looks like in a family and in a classroom and in a workplace, kind of saying that we need to think about democracy in everyday life.
Yes.
And, there's a lot of psychological research that says that human beings really just don't thrive as well when they feel powerless. And that's been shown for infants and for very old people and everybody in between. It's been shown in a range of different places. So in the new book, In Unconditional Parenting, I'm interested in engaging parents about thinking how they can bring their kids in on making meaningful choices, because kids learn how to make good decisions by making decisions, not by following directions.
Yes.
And a lot of times when we don't let them choose, we choose for them, it's not really because they're incapable of it, not mature enough, but because we're unwilling or unable to part with power. And so I ask people to think about that. And I even have a little activity built in about reflecting on problems that we have with our kids. And
reflective listening.
Ways we can listen, respond to them, talk less and ask more, and figure out ways to let kids play a part in making the decisions about how many brownies to have or what the curfew should be or whatever.
Yes, I agree with you. I feel that many people must agree with you or your books wouldn't be selling like crazy, and that you have managed...
like sane.
Pardon?
They're selling like sane.
They're helping people find sanity, obviously, and you're creating a huge community. So what you're saying is ringing true to so many people. It's exciting.
You know, in our culture, it's clearly a minority report. I don't delude myself.
Well, I'm hoping by this radio program and that we'll be empowering more and more parents and people who work with children. I'm really hopeful of that.
Well, I appreciate that sentiment as well as the opportunity. You know, I set up this website around the book called unconditionalparenting.com in part so that I could have within the website a parenting board, which I'd never even participated in, much less hosted, so that parents who read the book, found it interesting or frustrating or intriguing, affirming, whatever, could talk to other parents who had similar reactions, and those who came away saying, yeah, but what do I do when my kid, ... could get those responses from other parents. And so I set up this message board, and it's really very interesting. A lot of people there don't agree with me on all the issues, but they have intriguing discussions, some of them very concrete and some of them more philosophical. But the reaction that I saw from so many people is just that sense that I felt alone holding a philosophy that's really about needing to work with kids, when the in-laws and the neighbors and the other parents of kids in school all assume that you need more discipline, tougher regulation, tighter control, more punishment when the kid acts out, which just didn't feel right to a given parent, thinking, I'm crazy, I'm the only one around here, what's wrong with me? And now discovering through this a community, a network of other people who are similarly inclined.
Yes, there are others who are similarly inclined. Many of the people who have signed this Alliance for Childhood, I think, would agree with you about children and choice and having control over their lives and not controlling, not seeing a child as part of yourself, but as another equal.
Yeah, that's a mouthful, that last one you just said, because I've noticed that it's not just the old-fashioned red meat, your butt's going to be sore when your father gets home approach that's controlling, that there are people who are, what should we call them? Let's call it vegan control instead of red meat control. You know, lefty politics, spiritual, psychotherapeutically inclined, in general, very progressive socially, culturally, and so on, who nevertheless treat their kids like wholly owned subsidiaries of themselves, micromanaging each aspect of their children, thinking that if they say, good job, to their child every 10 seconds, that's not controlling, when it's nothing but controlling. So it's a hard thing to recognize, especially when the control doesn't take the form of a swat on the butt.
Right.
Instead, a colorful dinosaur sticker or a patronizing pat on the head or too much hovering.
Yes, it's still manipulation.
That's right. That's right.
So a parent once told me that my hugs and smiles were rewards. And it took me aback. I thought about it for a while because it just is my natural body language. But it made me think.
Well, some hugs are and some hugs aren't. I mean, if that person said it to you because that person noticed that you were doling them out contingently, that is, based on the child's behavior, then that might have been an interesting, although troubling, insight
right.
for you to reflect on. But if the person who said that meant that all hugs are necessarily controlling or manipulative, then I strongly disagree.
Yes, that's where it was coming from, because I was doing what you had done in the beginning, was going off on a tirade about Skinner.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. And therefore,
yes.
all right. Well, you know, there's a big difference between, I tell this to teachers, between having a pizza party, which I think can be a lot of fun on a Friday, on the one hand, and saying, we're going to have a pizza party if everyone is good this week, or if people do well on the multiplication test.
Right.
That if is the condition. That's what turns it into a reward. Pizza's not inherently. Hugs are not inherently manipulative or rewards, but they can be used that way.
Right.
And it's bad enough when we turn pizza, or money for that matter, in the workplace into a doggy biscuit, but it's even sadder when we turn care into a reward, because care that has to be earned isn't really care at all.
No, it isn't. And I don't feel that children don't care. I feel that children are very caring. They are very caring, and they're very sensitive when you aren't caring to others.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's been my experience with children. And someone asked me a question that if we had time, and they said, would you ask Alfie if he thinks that violence is inborn?
I think the capacity to create violence is inborn, just as the capacity to be peaceful and make peace, which is setting the bar a little higher, are inborn. I think we have the capacity to be competitive or cooperative, to be altruistic or incredibly selfish. But that was really the finding that came out of that other book, the earlier one you mentioned, The Brighter Side of Human Nature,
right,
is that the violence, the selfishness, or the competitiveness are not closer to the core of what it means to be human. We don't incline that way more than the reverse is true. But even to take what I think of as a rather balanced approach seems radical in a culture that assumes the worst. I think I open the book by saying something like, somebody who thinks well of herself is thought to have high self-esteem and is applauded, and someone who thinks well of his country is considered a patriot and is applauded, and someone who thinks well of his or her species is considered a fruitcake.
Is regarded as hopeless, naive, and is dismissed.
That's you have it in front of you.
Yeah.
Right. I don't. But yes. That's
I know you don't. I know it was unfair of me, but yeah. It was just, it's such a, well, all of your books are great, but this one.
Well, thank you.
Is awesome, especially right now, you know, politics being what they are, and so many people saying, you know, oh, well, you know, it's just human nature in the pejorative,
right.
You know, rather than the majority of even Americans, they want choice for women, they want care of the environment, and they want, you know, peace, but the information they've gotten is so distorted that we don't realize this is the same America that gave us the civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
And so that verifies your thesis that most people really come out of that brighter side of human nature. And it's just when, you know, that other side has so much power and money in the airwaves,
yes,
that we lose sight of that.
Right. And there could simply be an honest difference of opinion among dispassionate searchers for the truth about what the nature of human nature is. But I've learned to ask that classic Latin question, cui bono, who benefits, whose interests are served by particular practices and premises, so that if people assume that humans are naturally and unavoidably violent or selfish, who benefits from that view? And it's
right.
Interesting to play that out as a thought experiment,
mm-hmm.
Because I think certain institutions and dogmas do tend to benefit from that assumption. So
right.
I worry about that. And regardless, even if I'm wrong, and it isn't motivated by particular desire to have things turn out one way or the other, nevertheless it has that effect. And to assume the worst about people, about kids, or about that kid over there tends to generate a self-fulfilling prophecy.
I agree.
Where people tend to live down to the little that's expected of them. The good news, since we're nearing the end of the half hour, maybe it makes sense to end on this bit of good news, is that we can create an auspicious circle instead of a vicious circle. And we can do that in general as long as we are not naive but are realistic. And we can do so with children in the classroom and in the family, because when we expect that kids don't need to be threatened with harm, with punishment for acting wrongly, that we can offer guidance and support that they will act up to our expectations, that often creates a relationship with trust and respect that brings about that very expectation. And it doesn't always happen, but it's more likely to happen than when we assume the reverse.
I have seen it happen,
mm-hmm.
So I know you're right. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to hold on to you. I do have other questions, but it's your night, and so if you want to stay a little longer, great. But if you
why don't we do one more question, if that's all right? And
okay. The another question was if you find that there violence and repression, are there meaningful ways of expressing it? Like I think you know, art, discussion, reenactment.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think these are appropriate, or do you feel that it's appropriate that a child not express any of these feelings in any way?
Well, there's different ways of expressing. My inclination is to say that if a child has those feelings, denying their existence is never terribly useful. You end up not only making children lie to us about what they're feeling, but worse, lie to themselves. That can't have a good resolution. On the other hand, I'm more interested in where those feelings came from, so that consistent with what we were just talking about, our assumptions about kids and human beings, if we start with a different premise than, say, Freud did,
right,
and we don't believe that inside us all is this cauldron of unconscious, awful aggression and stuff that just has to be vented, but instead see that as a problem to be solved or a question to be answered, how come this kid has so much rage, then it may be okay to say, let's talk about it, let's acknowledge it, but we're not going to stop there. Because one thing we know for certain from the empirical evidence of the last half century is that catharsis theory is wrong. You don't end up with less of that stuff as a result of having expressed it. In fact, you may have lower inhibition to expressing it, and depending on the response from the adult, you may be encouraged to do it again. So sometimes we teach kids the acceptability of aggression in a naive but well-meaning attempt to just affirm or validate their feelings. So it's not a clear-cut answer, but I want to know where it's coming from, not just how to respond to it when it's expressed.
Right. So this idea that the children are they live out the entire history of humanity in their play.
That's a little sweeping for me.
That's too sweeping. Okay, well, that's what I want to know. That's what I'm asking.
Well, I think they're telling us something about themselves. Whether they're telling us something about the whole history of humankind, I'm not so sure.
Uh-huh.
Maybe. I'd be open to
this.
This is
Joseph Campbell and Jung, of
What's
course.
That?
This is Joseph Campbell and Jung.
Oh, yeah.
Who would, you know, that children will, even if you don't let them have guns or swords, that they'll pick up a stick and they'll, because they're acting out the whole of human history, and that if you don't allow them to do that, then you're encouraging repression.
Yeah, that sounds to me like a, how shall we say, more a groovier version of biological determinism. So if I don't like it in its old-fashioned, old-school, harsher aspect, I'm going to be just as suspicious of it when it comes dressed up in spiritual garb.
Uh-huh.
I think it's just a different version of the same thing. What's good for the Freudian goose is good for the Jungian gander.
Gander, I see. So what would you do if a child started using a stick as a gun or as a sword? What you would approach him and say ask the question why?
Depends on the age. I'm not sure a child would be able to answer why.
Say
if it was my child, I might react differently than if it was a kid I saw on the street.
Uh-huh.
My kids never did that. Maybe I'm just lucky. I don't know if it's because there may be, in some cases, kids doing it just because they saw it and it looked kind of neat, so it was modeled for them. Other cases, they may be doing it because they got a lot of rage, and if you look at what's happening in the home, it's not surprising. So
I see.
How I would respond in my head isn't necessarily the way I would respond behaviorally.
Mm-hmm.
And again, my kid, not the same as yours, 4-year-old, not the same as a 10-year-old. So a lot of variation there. But I might go up to the kid and see if we could come up with a slightly less aggressive but no less imaginative way to play with the stick.
Right. I understand. Okay, I think I thank you very much for that. It was very clear, and I think the person who asked the question will be happy that I asked you and got that and got your response. And do you feel that reading books to young children, toddlers, preschoolers, kindergartners that have, like about knights and, fishing, where, of course, you're killing the fish, or going on a hunt, that kind of thing. Is that encouraging, or would you avoid any of those, of that kind of literature? Or
Depends on age. When with my 6-year-old, I'm not so keen to model that kind of stuff. With my 10-year-old, I think she's able to distance herself from it and engage in a conversation about it with me, so that we can take something like that, as long as it's not scary.
Right.
But if it's not scary, but nevertheless it's modeling something bad, when kids get to a certain age, you can use it as a teachable moment. You can, put the book down for a moment and say, what did he do? Does that make sense to you? Why do you think he did? Well, how else could he have solved that problem? How do you feel when people do stuff that looks like that to you?
Right, and that's wonderful. But you wouldn't not read the book.
I would not read it to a child old enough to unpack it with me and have some distance from it and understand that I'm not, by reading it,
approving,
endorsing it.
I understand.
But below a certain age, I will confess that with both my children, I have edited, when reading out loud sometimes, stuff that I have a problem with. I must take my leave now, though. I've enjoyed the conversation. But
thank you so very, very much for your time, Alfie. I can't thank you enough.
Oh, well, I appreciate your interest in my work and your willingness to share it with your listeners.
Oh, thank you. And can I, and your contact information, cohen@alfiecohen.org?
Well, it's Cohen, actually. So it's, I think people can, if they want to, contact me through the website. So go to the website first, which is www.alfiekohn.org.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much, and good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye now. Well, we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Now is the time. Now is the time for all good men to get together with one another, iron out their problems and iron out their quarrels, and try to live as brothers, and try to find peace within without stepping on one another. And due respect to the women of the world, just remember we all had mothers.
Make this land a better land in the world in which we live.
And help each man be a better man with the kindness that you give. And I know we can make it.
I know that we can.
I know done well we can work it out.
Oh yes we can, I know we can. Yes we can. Why can't we if we wanna? Yes we can.
I know we can make it work.
I know that
if we try.
Oh yes we can, I know we can. Yes we can, great gosh almighty. Yes we can, I know we can.
Take care of the children of the world. They're our strongest hope for the future, the little bit of boys and girls. And make this land a better land. Each man be a better man with the kindness that you give. And I know we can make it.
I know that we can.
I know done well we can work it out.
Oh yes we can, I know we can. Yes we can. Why can't we if we want it? Yes we can.
I know we can make it work.
I know that we can.
I know we can make it if we try.
Oh yes we can, I know we can. Yes we can, great gosh almighty.
They're our strongest hope for the future, the little bitty boys and girls.
Make this land a better land than the world in which we live.
And help each man be a better man with the kindness that you give. And I know we can make it.
I know that we can.
I know darn well that we can work it out. If we try.
Oh, yes, we can, and no, we can't, can. Yes, we can. Great gosh almighty. Yes, we can, and no, we can't, can.
Oh, yes, we can, and no, we can't, can. Yes, we can, can, and why can't we? If we want to, yes, we can, can. Oh, yes, we can, and no, we can't, can. Yes, we can. Great gosh almighty. Yes, we can, and no, we can't, can. Oh, yes, we can, and no, we can't, can. Yes, we can, can, and why can't we? If we want to, yes, we can, can. Oh, yes, we can, and no, we can't, can. Yes, we can. Great gosh almighty. Yes, we can, and no, we can't.
That was Alan Toussaint. Yes, we can. Education Now is being brought to you in part by our members and Alicia Russell, realtor at Beverly Sanders Realty in Ukiah. Working with both buyers and sellers throughout inland Mendocino County, showing property plus listings and open house information at 391-9433. Didn't do that at the top of the hour. This is KZYX and Z, and this is Education Now, and we've just finished our wonderful conversation with Alfie Cohen, and I hope that you enjoyed that as much as I did. We've got about 10 minutes left, and I want to talk to you a bit about future programs. In September, I hope that we'll have Jonathan Cozall, author of Shame of the Nation, and another signator of the Alliance for Childhood. I also want to tell you that if you want to contact the Alliance for Childhood, go to the web, www.allianceforchildhood.org, that you can contact me at hermes@pacific.net. That's H-E-R-M-E-S. @pacific.net. And you can also listen to the show tonight and to last month's show with William Crane at Pacific Sites, PACIFICSITES. Let me get that just perfectly for you. Yes, I'm looking for it to give it to you just exactly perfectly, and I can't find it. Yes, at Pacific Sites, www.pacificsites.com/TildaHermes. PacificSites.com/TildaHermes. And you can hear tonight's show and last month's show with William Crane. And you can find out more about me on that website as well. You can also write to me at Athena, Education Now, care of KZYX and Z, P.O. Box 1, Philo, California. And I'm bringing questions that I get from the outreach that I did for this show. I'm bringing those questions to this program with me. I wanted to talk to you tonight about the census and share information on the census with you, but I don't know if we're going to have a great deal of opportunity. I think the best thing for me to do is to tell you everything that is necessary to tell you, and then if we have some time, we'll get back to the census. I want to follow up on the fifth edition of William Crane's book, Theories of Development, that we were talking about last month, because he's added so much meaningful information to the understanding of human development. And he's really added a lot on what we were on Freud and Jung that we were talking about tonight. And that's very exciting for me because I have a great deal of information on Jung. We're going to be talking in the future about psychology and what that word means. Of course, psyche means the self. And so it's the science of the self. And we're going to be talking a lot about that in the future. But as well as Jonathan Cozal, next month on May 18th, the third Thursday on Education Now, I will be sharing the voices of Dr. Betsy Coe on the potential of the adolescent and Dr. Arthur L. Costa on five thoughts for a more thoughtful curriculum. These will be segments from a recent seminar in Houston and contains current brain research, both of these talks, and I've got to distill them down into two segments. I hope I can do that. As well, in the future, I'm going to be speaking at the homeschooling conference in August, and I'm going to be bringing information to you from that homeschooling conference, as well as having some local voices here in homeschooling. Then I'm going to be bringing you some model environments. Dr. Betsy Coe, who will be listening to on adolescence next month, has created an incredible model environment, and that's one of the main reasons I want to share Betsy's work with you. But there are other model schools that I'll be bringing to you. The schools in Mendocino County are really wonderful for the most part, and we are so lucky. But my hope is that by presenting model environments that exist and current research that you as parents and teachers and concerned others can augment what's provided now for each individual child. And we can see that this becomes a brighter place for tomorrow's children. I'm doing this show because I came to California when we were deciding where we were going to go to graduate school, and we had the opportunity to go to a lot of different places to graduate school, but we decided to come to California because at that time, California was second only to New York in education. That would have been in 1969. And it fell to 27th place in 80 with Proposition 13. And that's when I decided I had to do it myself because I knew I wanted to have children. And the public schools in California were fantastic. And the college was free. And so that promise to the children of California has been broken. We were 27th in the 80s, and now we're down in the 40s in the most current statistics. And so you know that we knew how to do it. We knew how to do it, and we have to get back there. And I'm hoping that with this show and with the work of all of these professionals who care so much about children, that we will get back there. I wanted to, when we were talking with William Crane, we talked about Rhoda Kellogg. And I encourage you so much to look up Rhoda Kellogg and the psychology of children's art. One of the wonderful things about Rhoda Kellogg's The Psychology of Children's Art is that you see that at a particular phase in a child's development, they will draw this circle corded by the cross, which is a very ancient symbol. And yet children everywhere, in every culture, in every country, draw that symbol, which I think is extremely exciting and says a great deal about our children. Well, we're running out of time, and so we're going to cover the senses. I'm going to make that a future program. I hope that you will write to me and or email me and tell me, if you have any ideas about what you've heard, how you feel, or things you'd like to hear on this program, that you will connect and let me know. Okay. We're going to go to some music for a moment here. Well, we're having some trouble getting the music. We're still trying. So hold on a minute. I've got a lot to tell you, and I wanted to give you a little music background to start with and while I got set up. So lights are flashing in here, but I'm not going to answer phones. I'm new at this. I'm sorry if this is frustrating to you.
Now is the time for all good men to get together with one another. Iron out their problems and...
We'll be with you. We're getting there. We're getting there.
Some folks I used to know used to smile and say hello, spin the world and turn the page, entertaining from the stage. But Father Time forever true loves its own, and me and you disappear just like the sun when the day is done. World is falling down, hold my hand. It's a lonely sound, hold my hand. We'll follow the breeze and go like the wind, and look for a place where the wind blows been. World is falling down.
I hope you've enjoyed tonight's show as much as I did, and Alfie Cohen, he was wonderful. Thank you, and I hope you will send your comments to me. I want to hear from you. I want to say thank you to Bob Vaughn for his help engineering tonight and helping me learn the board. Thank you to my son Anthony Melville for recording, and Christopher Melville for constant support. And to all my family for their support. Thank you to Beth Lang. I just couldn't do anything without Beth. And to Pam Courtwright, who's done so much to support and help me. Thank you to Mary Eigner and the staff here at KZYXNZ. Thank you to the programmers. They bring in the world in words and music. Thank you to the listeners and underwriters, and especially all of us as members. We have a treasure here in these critical times. These are critical times for freedom in the earth. And this station is a cosmic gift. And I am so grateful to everyone for the support during the pledge drive and every day. Education Now was brought to you tonight by our members and Alicia Russell, Realtor at Beverly Sanders Realty in Ukiah, 391-9433. This is KZYXNZ Community Radio. At the top of the hour will be Earth and Sky, and then the Treehouse with Reality Check, who will be their visitors. I want to tell you about some events. The Anderson Valley Teen Center is having a fundraiser to support activities for teens at the Apple Hall on Friday, April 21st. There'll be a tri-tip and baked potato bar, dinner followed by a contra dance with the band Girls Night Out. There will also be a silent auction with many great items. All ages are welcome. Tickets available from Anderson Valley High School students or Boontberry. Call 391-4016 for more information. Yom HaBosh is the annual day of remembrance of the victims of the Holocaust. There will be a Holocaust exhibit, including paintings and sculptures, at the Mendocino Art Center during the month of April. Phone 937-0208 and contact Jay Frankston for more information. Mendocino Spring Poetry Celebration at Hill House in Mendocino, Saturday, April 22nd at noon, and again at 6. Hosts Dan Roberts and Sharon Dubiago will be waiting to hear your hottest 3 minutes. Bush is coming to St. Helena in the Napa Valley, one night only, Friday, April 21st, 5 to 7, and one morning only, Saturday, April 22nd, 8 to 10. Unwelcome Bush. If you'd like to participate in Anderson Valley, call 895-2825. For carpooling information from the coast, call 964-3621 and ask Zach for carpooling information.
We had a lot of rain last year. The news is really very sad. The time is late, the fruit is bad. The mornings come and roosters crow. People have no place to go and disappear just like the sun when the day is done. Oh, the world is falling down. Oh, my hand. It's a lonely sound. Hold my hand. We'll follow the sun and live for the day and look for a place where the children play. The world is falling down. Hold my hand. Hold my hand. Hold my hand. Hold my hand. The world is falling down. Hold my hand. Hold my hand, hold my hand.
Good night, everybody, and may the force be with us all.
This is Earth and Sky on what some historians call the Middle Passage.
From the 1400s to the 1800s, slave traders transported millions of kidnapped Africans across the Atlantic. The Middle Passage refers to the ocean trip from the shores of Western Africa to the slave markets in the Americas.
Historians say the Middle Passage was the longest and most lethal part of the journey to America. Hundreds of people were packed into a single ship, and the trip lasted weeks or sometimes months.
At least 3 million souls perished in the transatlantic slave trade. It was always a lethal, deadly passage or horrific conditions. But if the winds and the currents combined to make that voyage longer, then lethality would be greater on those voyages.
That was geographer Doug Reardon at Coppin State University. He's conducting a study that compares contemporary satellite data about sea surface winds and currents with a database of 27,000 ships' logs. He wants to know why some of the slave traders' voyages were longer and more deadly than others.
What I hope to contribute, though, is the look at how the human and the environmental systems were coupled in some respects, how the environment played a role in this tragic episode of human history.
Our thanks today to NASA. Explore, discover, understand. We're Block N Bird for Earth and Sky.
This is KZYX 90.7 FM Philo, KZYZ 91.5 FM Willits and Ukiah, 88.3 FM Fort Bragg. Studio lines are 895-2448. 1-800-499-7117, or you can also follow us with that little bit of Mendocino you can carry with you everywhere and not get arrested, kzyx.org. Comment lines 895-9616.
Good rider, Zip-ride-o, zip-ride-o. Everyone's a winner, bargains galore.
Aw, oh, crikey, thanks for donating to the station. It's just so keen. Yah, crikey.
One-tenth of a dollar, one-tenth of a dollar. We got service after the sale. How about perfume? We got perfume. How about an engagement ring? Some for the little lady, some for the little lady, some for the little lady. $3-4. We got a year-end clearance. We got our white sale and a smoke-damaged furniture. You can drive it away today. Act now. Act now.
Thanks, honey. Your money is sweeter than honey. Honey.
No muss, no fuss, no.
I don't mean to do it the devil or something, but we sure do appreciate it here at the station. All your money is sweet, honey.
Original retail price, skip the middle man. Don't settle for less. How do we do it? How do we do it? Volume, volume, turn up the volume.
How do we do it? We do it with your help. That's how we do it. You give the money. Thank you.
Don't be caught with the drawers down. You